From Alaskatoon Media Institute, I'm Orman Lewis, and this is Film Club, a podcast series where our youth film critics and cultural connoisseurs spill the theoretical tea on a new movie and sometimes talk to filmmakers. Emilio Miguel Torres is a filmmaker who was raised in Ketchikan, Alaska. As a kid, Torres got involved with a local community theater, First City Players, where he was exposed to directing and storytelling. He spent high school in Seattle before attending NYU Film School. Since graduating college in 2021, he has made a handful of short films, including The Ladder, which tells the story of an aging Alaskan fisherman who must decide between accepting old age and restarting his life through a futuristic procedure. It was shot in Ketchikan with the help of many of the individuals who helped foster his love of movies as a kid. Torres currently lives in Phoenix, Arizona, but in the fall of 2023, he returned again to his hometown to shoot his first feature film, an expansion of The Ladder. Currently, the film is in post-production, and Torres has launched a crowdfunding campaign to help finish his movie. AVME producer Jordan Kell spoke with Torres over Zoom to talk about The Ladder. He talked about the challenges of filming in the remote town of Ketchikan, what he hopes to accomplish with the crowdfunding campaign, and how his hometown community came together to help him with his passion project.
You're currently crowdfunding to finish the feature film, and what's this movie about? How would you describe this to maybe people who haven't seen your 2021 proof of concept?
Totally. So The Ladder is a drama sci-fi feature film. It tells the story of Arthur, who's an aging Alaskan fisherman, sort of in the twilight of his life. We learn pretty early on the film that his wife has passed away several years ago. His adult son is sort of kind of too busy for him, and he keeps calling him, but, you know, doesn't hear back. And he's sort of just part of an aging community, which, you know, is very true for a lot of people in sort of these remote areas across the country, really. And in the film, he gets invited to this conference, and at this conference, this biotechnology company called Actolife basically pitches this procedure, which is a state-of-the-art biotechnology procedure where people can upload their consciousness into a synthetic vessel, which is basically a 21-year-old version of themselves. So they basically get a fresh start at life right at the age of 21. They call it the fresh start. And Arthur learns that Ketchikan has been chosen as sort of a research city where they're going to test this procedure and kind of see how it affects the community. And so he gets offered to do it for free. And he gets told that, you know, if he doesn't do this procedure for free, it's going to be very expensive one day. So he sort of, you know, has to make a decision. And so the film is basically about Arthur's journey and about whether or not he does the procedure. And in 2021, right after I graduated NYU, I made a proof of concept short film that's sort of the basic same premise. And so the feature is basically the same story as a short film, just, you know, expanded and, you know, I think 10 times better, as well as, you know, 10 times the scale.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed looking at it. I'm watching the 2021 proof of concept. I'm immediately drawn into that, especially being from Alaska, being a local Alaskan. You get to see those small towns, and you, if you ever have family or visit the villages, you can definitely get that vibe and feel for Arthur, because of his distant connection with the sun. You know, was it always your intent to make it like an expanded film? Did you always have a bigger vision, or do you think maybe the accumulated awards and accolades you got from that spurred it into a larger project?
I think realistically, and, you know, maybe this is comforting for some filmmakers out there, I mean, I think when you get started in your film career, you don't know if you're ever going to get the chance to make a feature film. It's like such a, you know, huge feat, and, you know, it's expensive and really difficult. So, you know, when I made it, I always hoped that it would turn into something bigger, whether it was a feature film. I also sort of had a concept for sort of a limited series that was kind of about the same premise. But the premise itself was just very interesting to me, and the story had a lot of connections to my own life. So it was really easy for me to sort of write about it and I think make it authentic. But, you know, when I started writing the short film, it was pretty simple. It didn't even have a sci-fi premise or anything like that. I grew up in Ketchikan and felt like I owed so much to the city for how they supported me to explore arts professionally. And so when I graduated NYU, I was like, okay, you know, I've learned how to make movies. I've done these successful projects. I want to make my next movie in my hometown. And at the time, I was sort of dealing with kind of changing family dynamics between my own father and myself, and starting to think a lot about kind of this idea of coming of age at different points of our life. Like so often we think about coming of age as being, you know, a kid to an adult, but there's also coming of ages of, you know, of adult becoming a father, you know, adult becoming an old person, you know, there's all these kind of different coming of ages. And so the start was just a simple short film about a father and a son and a phone call, and it took place in Ketchikan. And then I just started to let the story develop, and it really became interesting to me about that idea of like choosing to accept that final chapter of life. And I thought, you know, what would be better? Like, what would be a better way to show that a character was choosing, you know, to just move forward than to have this procedure where he could go back, but then, you know, he has the option to not, and that can really explore those themes. There's the reason the movie's called The Ladder is Ketchikan's the salmon capital. As a kid, the salmon life cycle was like required education in Ketchikan, and I, you know, I what I found so interesting about it growing up is this idea of like, you know, salmon spend most of their life in the ocean, most of their life out in the ocean, and then one day they decide to, you know, come swim upstream. And I just thought that choice, and in Ketchikan there is an actual fish ladder on Creek Street where salmon jump up, and you know, that's sort of where they go into the final chapter of life. I thought that was just a really great metaphor for the film. And one thing that was really cool is that in Ketchikan there's a pretty famous salmon ladder there, and the house that's right next to the salmon ladder we actually got to use as a central location for the film. So the literal salmon ladder is like the foundation of both the film's, you know, visual look as well as the metaphor for the film. And so that's kind of how it all came together. And yeah, to your point, it ended up going to festivals and winning awards. It got picked up by Alaska Airlines for the in-flight streaming platform, and it's gotten a lot of views. And because I knew I always wanted to make something bigger, I think all of that momentum showed me that it was possible. So last year, I finished writing the feature film, like last January 2023. And then I just spent the whole year, you know, getting the money, making the movie, and now we're in post.
That's awesome. That's I very much like the the physical semblance and the artistic like metaphors and how they just blend, you know. I think the ladder is a very unique name because at first I was like, well, what could this mean? You know, you think of ladders climbing up, you know, going upwards, but you never really think of it towards like a salmon ladder, right? I feel like that's a very unique thing to coastal regions, like especially Alaska, seeing as how that's our primary export besides oil, you know, it's very close to a lot of communities. What's the timeline like between the short and the feature? Like, how long did it take for the short, and how long is the feature going on?
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, this story has kind of been with me for 5 years. In 2019, when I was still in film school, I had just finished my first short film. It's a film called Wannabe that I made in Seattle. And I was like, okay, I want to start writing something new. And so, like I said, it kind of started with just the idea of a father and son relationship in Ketchikan. And then I, you know, at NYU, you do screenwriting classes. So I used my screenwriting classes to sort of workshop the script. So between fall 2019 to spring 2020, I was workshopping it, and then, you know, COVID happened, the pandemic. Originally, like before March, like in February, I felt this short script was in a good place, and I was like, okay, I want to make it this summer. So originally the plan was to make the short film in the summer of 2020. And at that point, I had never made a short film for any type of budget. Like the Wannabe short film I made was like $500, maybe everything put together. And so I was like, oh, I'm just gonna do it, you know, low budget, just, you know, go do it again with my friends in Alaska. And then when COVID happened, you know, I took the time to keep writing it and sort of see where the industry was going. And a year later, I graduated NYU in 3 years. So, you know, I was graduating film school. I felt like I was a much stronger filmmaker. I was like, okay, well, maybe I should, you know, really treat this as a proper production. So we made a budget, my producer Alexandria Hellman and I, for $20,000. And so we decided to launch a crowdfunding campaign. And so in 2021, we raised $20,000, the first 15,000 of which we raised just in 10 days, actually. And that was really amazing because that was just basically a bunch of people from Ketchikan who are donating and supporting. And then we made the short film in 2021, sent it off to festivals. It actually premiered at the Anchorage International Film Festival in December 2021, and then finished its festival run kind of middle of the year 2022. And then I premiered it on YouTube in the fall, and that's when Alaska Airlines saw it and asked to pick it up. And so kind of by all throughout that, festival run, I was sort of writing the script, and I completed the script, like I said, in January 2023. So from January 2023, I had like a proven short film. I had a feature script. And so I just started reaching out to investors and supporters, and pretty much all the funding for this film came from people from Ketchikan or various people I've met in my life who want to support the film financially and also, take some ownership in the film so they can sort of, as investors, see success if this film gets bigger. So originally I just went out for production funds, so just how much it took to shoot the film, which we did in October of 2023. Production was a 3 week long shoot in October. I can get into kind of some of the challenges of filming in Alaska, which is maybe why a lot of people don't film here. But just to kind of wrap up the timeline, we finished production. We've been editing the film. Just this last weekend, we had a couple of pickup scenes that we actually shot in New York. So I was in New York and we shot some things there. And then, yeah, so now we're fully done with filming. And so we're in post-production. We're raising about $55,000 to complete the film. That's just, going to cover all the different post costs, getting it ready for festivals and distributors and kind of pursuing that probably this fall. I hope to finish the film by end of August so we can hit some festival due dates. And yeah, that's basically the past 5 years of my life has been trying to make this, take this movie out of the universe. One of my mentors at film school always said, like, no one's going to hand you a film. You kind of have to rip it out of the universe.
Yeah. So is it all the same crew from the original or same like casting as well? Or how have you expanded upon it? Like, what was the original team size for the short versus full production for feature length?
The first short film's like 15 minutes, and the cast is all local actors from Ketchikan. The crew, though, was me, some hands from Ketchikan, but I did also fly in some of my closest collaborators from NYU, and it was really exciting working with them because they got to come to Ketchikan and we shot for 3 days when we made the short film, and shooting with them was awesome. Pretty much everyone who was on the crew for the short film that was out of town, we had like a six person crew for the short film. So like I said, pretty small scale. But for the feature, we had about a 15 person crew, and then depending on the day, would get volunteers from Ketchikan to help out. Most of the crew, like I said, are peers that I had from NYU that I went to Ketchikan with, and the value of that was just me having worked with them before, and then sort of pairing that expertise with the talent in local Ketchikan to make a film. But what was really cool and really important to me is that, as much as possible, we involve the community in their own storytelling. I mean, I think every Alaskan knows that, people make films in Alaska all the time, but they don't really shoot there, or, they don't actually cast Alaskan actors. And so I'm really proud of the fact that, like, essentially every single role in our film is a local actor. And in particular, something that's really meaningful is that the lead actor, his name is Keith Smith. He was actually really involved in the First City Players theater company that I mentioned before. And so he's been a mentor for me growing up in directing and storytelling and making art. And so kind of when I wrote the role, I imagined him doing it. And that was before I even asked him if he was available or interested. But he was, and he was really amazing. He actually won Best Actor at the Portland Short Film Festival. And the feature film is basically completely on his shoulders because it's so focused on the character of Arthur.
Now, you said a lot of the crew was from Ketchikan, and you mentioned but Arthur, right, from the short. You said, he got an acting award. He's a very capable actor, and you looked up to him as a mentor. Did any of the other crew, did you grow up with any of the other crew and or have connections to them prior?
Yeah, so most of the film crew, like the cinematographer, camera team, G&E team, sound team, most of that crew were out-of-towners that I went to film school with. But the cast itself was all local talent, and then we had a few crew positions that were filled by local filmmakers. But Ketchikan's a small town. There's not that many people who have the background to take on a feature film production at this level. But the cast was all people that I had connections with, which was really special. So like I said, the lead, he was sort of another father figure for me growing up. So a movie about, you know, fathers and sons, that was a fitting, you know, creative process. But also the son in the film is played by an actor named Ty Hewitt. And I know he's actually was in a film that I really like called Well Away as well. But Ty was actually the first director that I acted for in a play. And it was really cool, full circle, to direct him in this feature. And also there was other awesome actors like Heidi Poet. She's from Ketchikan. I grew up doing theater with her, so to direct her was really special. And it was really fun too to have some of my friends that I grew up with, you know, come in. And one of my best friends I grew up with was our BTS photographer. I had some that were in, you know, scenes here and there. And there was also, you know, a lot of in the cast, there was also, you know, indigenous actors, one of which, Liz Weston, I grew up doing a theater show with. And so working with her was really special. She had never acted before, but, you know, I told her, like, you got this. Like, she auditioned and she earned the role. And so it was just really special. It's definitely, like, I would say over 100 different, you know, local Ketchikan people are featured in the movie, whether in, like, speaking roles or in extra roles. But it definitely is a community project in that sense.
Apart from trying to accomplish the crowdfunding campaign, what challenges did you face making The Ladder as a feature film? Because, I mean, personally, I'm very invested in how you did the boat shots, like how you guys filmed that, and if you guys did a lot of post editing for colors, or if you tried to do pre-post all your edits for that and try to get a good shot for that, because that's something I'm really curious about.
Sure. Well, I'm down to share anything and everything, but I know, you know, this podcast can't go on forever, so just cut me off when you've heard enough. I would just preface it by saying, like, you know, there's not a lot of films that get made in Alaska, and there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, smaller state, there's not a film and tax incentive. You know, there's all those different reasons why that's the case. But me growing up there, you know, I started making movies when I was 10 years old and got my first camera, and I'd run around Ketchikan and make movies. And it was always my dream to make a movie there one day. And the idea that, like, you know, I'd watch The Proposal with Sandra Bullock, and it would, you know, all take place in Sitka. And then you look it up after the fact, and they shot it all in Massachusetts, you know, with like one shot establishing of Sitka. Or there's a Christopher Nolan film that takes place in Alaska, but there's only like one shot that was actually shot in Alaska. And that always used to make me so mad as a kid. I'm like, why don't you film in Alaska if you're gonna make an Alaska film? I know there's been some recent, you know, shows and stuff that have been taking place in Alaska, but they like film in Iceland. For me, I was like, okay, we got to make this movie in Ketchikan. But I will say, having gone through a feature film, which is on a whole bigger scale than anything I've ever done before, I definitely understand why it's hard to shoot in Alaska, particularly Southeast Alaska. So for starters, you know, Ketchikan doesn't have like film rental. So, you know, if you're going to shoot something there, it's got to be equipment you own yourself. And so, first of all, we were renting, you know, a lot of equipment for this film. We shot an Arri Alexa Mini. We had a full, you know, G&E grip package. We had all, you know, all the bells and whistles you'd expect for, you know, a budget indie film. But we had to rent it from out of state. We rented our gear from Portland, Oregon, and we put it into a cargo van. And then I flew from Phoenix. That's where I live now. I flew to Portland. I picked up the gear. I drove it to Bellingham, put it on a ferry, and then it showed up to Ketchikan literally one day before we started filming. We filmed the movie, and then the next day we had a noon ferry that we had to catch with the gear to go back to Portland. And that was because there was no other way in October to get that much gear to Ketchikan. I was actually working with AK Grip and Rentals out of Anchorage, and Greg Curran, we were trying to find a way to get to Ketchikan for him, but there just was no way. So it had to happen that way. So that was, you know, a logistical challenge. And then, you know, once you're there, there's no such thing as, like, if something's broken, it's just broken. You know, our easy rig, which is sort of like, you know, like the backpack that
stabilizes the camera, keeps the weight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 weeks into shooting, the thread broke, and we called our camera rental place, and they're like, well, I mean, we can ship you new thread, but it's not going to get there in time. So the rest of the shoot, we put it on a Cine saddle and just handheld the camera whenever that was, you know, a necessity. As far as filming there, I mean, one of the main challenges, and this is one of the reasons we have to color correct, is like I said, Ketchikan's super rainy. So it was constantly raining the entire time we were there. There'd be days where it'd be sunny or it'd be cloudy, and that was nice. But definitely our footage, you know, a challenge is going to be matching that footage because you may shoot somewhere in the morning and it's sunny, and then 2 hours later it's rainy. And for continuity, that's a challenge. We also filmed on a boat, as you mentioned. So that was a pretty crazy thing to coordinate. When we did the short film, we had some scenes on the boat. There were scenes where the boat was docked, and then there was one scene where we saw the boat out in the ocean. And you know, for a short film, you can do that in an hour. You can just go out on the boat. We had a follow boat that we then put the camera on and got another shot, and then we were done. But for the feature film, you know, there's multiple pages that take place on the boat out in the water. And so it required a lot of logistics. We actually ended up having four different boats to pull off the scene. We'd have our picture boat, and then we had a follow boat, and that follow boat would have the mon a wireless monitor so I could watch. And actually, because the size of our boat, I couldn't even be on the boat where my actors were, because we literally could only fit my actors, our boat captain, and sound and camera. And then everyone else was on the other boat. I was watching monitor. I was directing through a walkie-talkie. But then we needed another boat because, you know, there could be changes that our crew had to make like on the fly. So there was a third boat. And then in the movie, there's like two different boats that seems to take place on. So that was the fourth boat. So we had a full 12-hour day. It was crazy. A lot of logistics of like, okay, I'm on this boat. Let's go out there. We get the shot. We come back. And then along those lines, we also had to figure out logistics because, you know, we catch a fish in the movie, which requires some movie magic. And that required our boat captain sort of rigging this thing where he could pull on a pole so we could get it, you know, a salmon being biting the pole and sort of like, you know, moving the pole so we could get that on camera. And so there was a lot of different sort of magic tricks happening in that way. And, you know, a lot of my crew who was from New York, it was their first time being in Ketchikan in October. So they just were not ready for that much rain.
Yeah, I was curious about seasickness. You got the locals who are they're accustomed to that filming, 12 hours on a boat's nothing, but then some people from out of town, New York, like how did they handle that? Were they all right?
My sound mixer, Eunice Chung, told me like a day before she left to Ketchikan, like, hey, I have very severe seasickness. And she had like, I don't know, she got this like band. I don't even know what it's called, but it's like this band that apparently helps with seasickness. And I think it helped out. But it was pretty funny because we like one of the major scenes happens on like a one-man hand troller boat, which is pretty small. Like that's what the main character Arthur uses. And so it was me, a cinematographer, my first assistant camera, my actor, and the, you know, actual guy who operated the boat on this tiny boat. And so me and Eunice were like cramped up in the boat getting sound. I'm watching monitor. But you know, it's indie film and everybody was there to make the best movie possible. And so whether it was rainy or cold or things broke, you know, we found creative solutions, and that's just a credit to my crew.
That's awesome. It sounds like there was a lot of fun to be had, especially with the boat scenes. Four boats. That's a whew. I know you previously crowdfunded the short film version of the latter. What did you learn from the filming of the shortened one that, you're utilizing now?
I feel like the thing that I learned the most from the latter short film was just kind of refocusing like my why as a director. I think especially when you go to like a pretentious film school, which I did, NYU, you know, you really get in your head about like, oh, I need to make a film to be the smartest, most genius creative ever. But the most meaningful experience I have had in my life so far was screening the latter short film in my hometown. We did that in the fall of 2021. And being able to sit in the movie theater that I grew up going to and watch a project that like so many people had contributed to make happen and see how people reacted and see how people liked it. And I hear from people from my hometown who are like, oh, I love watching the latter. I cry every time I watch it, you know, which implies that they've seen it multiple times and enjoy it. That just really focused me as a director, where I knew like, okay, like I make my movies for a community, for audiences. Like I don't think movies exist without audiences. My favorite thing in the world is after you watch a good movie, talking to your family or friends about like, what'd you think about it? Blah 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 blah. Well, they should have done this, you know. And so, if anything, the short film just showed me like how much Ketchikan means to me. And then also, I think it shows that there's a lot of interest in this story. I mean, like I said, we got almost 200,000 views on YouTube. And when I look at the analytics, it's a lot of people over the age of 55. And when you read the comments on the YouTube, it's a lot of people sort of reflecting on the premise of the film and giving their own experience or perspective on it, which is kind of exactly what I want my films to do. And so if anything, like I'm just really excited to finish this movie to see how my hometown likes it. And you know, hopefully it's something that they're proud of and something that they enjoy.
You are crowdfunding $55,000, and usually you see crowdfunding on like GoFundMe and such. So what's different about Seed and Spark? Why did you choose that as your medium?
Totally. Well, when I did the latter crowdfunding campaign, like I said, we kind of did two parts of a campaign. When we did the short film, we did a production and a post-production fundraise. So the production was about $15,000, and post-production was about $5,000. I raised the production funds in just 10 days. And you know, when you go to film school, you see a lot of people run crowdfunding campaigns for their passion projects and theses and things like that. And I had a lot of my friends kind of reach out to me, be like, "How'd you do that? How'd you raise the money?" And so I think I learned a lot about crowdfunding at the time. And actually, if you go to my YouTube channel, Taurus Productions LLC, I have a YouTube video kind of explaining my sort of methods and strategies when it comes to crowdfunding. But I think ultimately, something that I think is really important is that you need to kind of use a platform for your crowdfunding that cares about filmmakers. From my research and my experience, you know, Indiegogo, GoFundMe, Kickstarter, they are great platforms, but not really catered towards film, and not really addressing the needs that filmmakers have. Seed and Spark is a crowdfunding website that I tell everyone to use. I think they're the best. They're the best because, one, they don't take any platform fees. So like whatever you raise, you get. Most other websites will take a platform fee. Two, they don't let you launch a campaign until their team has reviewed it, given you feedback, and then you've acknowledged that you've addressed that feedback, which I think is so huge. I see so many people with really cool projects, but they just sort of post it online and just kind of wait for the money to come. Like crowdfunding is not something you can do passively. It's like a full-time job. You really need to put your all into the project, show people the value that you're creating and why they should join you. And then once it's launching, you know, you're reaching out to people constantly to get the funds. And Seed and Spark is like kind of the perfect place for that. And then something really cool about Seed and Spark is it's sort of a marketplace for up and coming films. So I've gotten people who have donated to, you know, the latter crowdfunding campaign that don't even know me, but just sort of passively came across the project on that platform. So huge fan of Seed and Spark. I think it's really important. And you know, something we did this time, which was really interesting, is about 2 weeks ago, I was going on a trip to New York to deal, you know, do some personal things, and then, like I said, do kind of a second unit shoot. And so we actually launched the campaign first. We launched the campaign first, and then I went on the trip. And then after the trip, this Monday, we had 30 days till the campaign ended. Usually, Seed and Spark recommends you do a 30-day campaign. And it's sort of that sweet spot of like, you got to get the money in a certain amount of time, but you still have enough time. And when I did the past few days, I've just been grinding the crowdfunding campaign. We're at 14% funded so far. I'm kind of putting together an event in Ketchikan, hopefully that we can do to sort of reach our final goal. But you know, it's really just, you know, I love the movie, but it's just a great phase. I always tell people crowdfunding is everything everywhere all at once. You know, you need to do social media, you need to be doing direct outreach, you need to have a good product. And all those things together, you know, really excites a community and makes them want to be a part of the legacy of the film.
We'll be right back with more of Jordan's conversation with filmmaker Emilio Torres after this short break. Alaska Teen Media Institute is looking for youth to join our team. As a youth producer, you can conduct interviews like the one you're listening to right now, edit audio, record voiceovers, help write scripts, and much more. And all of that is paid work. And get this. While we are based in Anchorage, you don't have to be there to work with us. A lot of the work we do is done remotely. So if you are between the ages of 13 and 24, living in Alaska, and interested in joining at me, go to alaskateammedia.org/join. You can also email us at news@alaskateammedia.org. Before we dive back into our interview with filmmaker Emilio Torres, let's hear a clip from his 2021 short film, The Ladder. In this scene, the main character Arthur, played by Keith Smith, talks about the salmon ladder in Ketchikan with his son and daughter-in-law, played by Jeff Carlson and Heidi Poet.
You know what that is?
Some kind of dam?
It's a salmon ladder.
What is it for?
Well, salmon spend most of their life out in the ocean. That's where we catch them. But when they get older, they come back, swim upstream, spawn, and die. But it can be difficult where the current's so rough. So we built them this ladder.
It helps them complete their life cycle. The salmon life cycle is like required education here.
The salmon just decide when it's their time. They just hop up on that ladder and accept that they've lived their life.
Well, at a certain age, you just know.
With The Ladder, the short film, it's very, it's more thought-provoking, right? It's not explicitly said to you like maybe in a feature length you'd be able to get the message through the beginning, you know, the standard hero's journey, you know, the rise, the climax, and the answer. So what were you unable to say in the short film that you're hoping to expand on in the feature film?
That's a great question. Well, you know, for me, I really like, I hope, you know, I guess you can watch my films and tell me if you think it's true, but I really try as a filmmaker to trust my audience and to put a lot into the details or into what's unsaid in my films and trust that the audience is sort of going to pick up on what I'm trying to imply or what I'm trying to illuminate. But also what's really cool is, you know, I think a film sort of belongs to the viewer. You know, when you watch a movie, you're watching it with the context of your life. You're watching it with your own frame of reference. So sometimes you can get something out of a movie that maybe isn't what the director intended, but that doesn't mean that your experience like is any less valid, if that makes sense. So I would say like, ultimately, I think this movie explores themes about finding purpose in life, aging. One thing that was kind of just like an aspect of the movie before, but definitely has become a bigger part of the movie in the future, it's kind of like, how do we make sense of ourselves in a world where technology is sort of changing everything? It's interesting because when I started writing the short, AI wasn't really the same kind of like talking point it is today. But I feel like now, like AI is like something that's on everybody's mind. Like, how is this going to affect our life? How is this going to affect our job? And the procedure in the movie is that same sort of world changing technology. And it's kind of exploring different people and how they sort of respond to that. And ultimately, you know, I don't want to spoil the film, but I hope in the end people sort of feel like they leave the theater and get a sense that, you know, life is beautiful and there's kind of value into the natural progress of life. And that at the end of the day, the world is going to change around you. Your family dynamics are going to change as you grow up. But all that matters is what you choose to do in spite of that, or like what you choose to do every day that you can't control. And that's also just like a philosophy I have for life in general. You know, I try to be a pretty optimistic person. I can't necessarily control everything in my life, but I can choose what I do from the moment I wake up until I go to bed. And so it just happens to be what I love to do is make movies.
So what's the inspiration for The Ladder? I know you delved a little bit into it, but if you could extrapolate more, what's The Ladder mean to you?
Well, kind of for starters, like I think a lot of times creative ideas for me sort of just come out of things that like I kind of find interesting, and then, you know, it gives me the ability to sort of think a lot about it. You know, I kind of need a way into some sort of premise. And my whole life I've always really been obsessed with the idea of starting again. I think a lot of people have this feeling, but just kind of this idea of like, oh, wouldn't it be so cool if I could like go back to freshman year of high school with everything I know now and like try it again. You know, I think it's something that a lot of people think about. And so I think I've always kind of been interested in making a movie kind of about that. This movie sort of fits that need. And then also, like I said, the movie's kind of loosely based on my own relationship with my own dad. And it's kind of ironic because sort of a motif in the film, we see this in the short film, but we see it even more in the feature, is this idea of like the father reaching out to the son, but the son being too busy to answer the phone, and sort of the disconnect there and how that creates conflict once they're back together. And it was so funny because, you know, working on this feature film, it was like the busiest time of my whole life. And my own dad would call me, and sometimes I'd be too busy to answer the phone. And I'd be like, this is so crazy. I'm making a movie about this father and son that are like losing connection, and I can't even answer my own dad's call because I'm so busy making this movie, which was definitely a meta moment. For the actual, the ladder, the fish ladder aspect of it, like I said earlier, is the whole movie's metaphor is about the salmon ladder and Ketchikan, and just this idea that like at some point in life, we all make a choice to accept the life we've lived and sort of like decide how we're going to move forward within those circumstances. And so just like the salmon hop up the salmon ladder, Arthur in the film has to make the choice about whether or not he wants to go up the salmon ladder. And there's something interesting there too, because the salmon ladder is kind of works with the natural life cycle, but it is still like man-made technology that sort of recontextualizes that life cycle. So for me, there's just lots of layers in the film, though I always joke that like the main reason why I called the ladder, this isn't true, but it's just kind of a funny joke, is that, you know, it's a movie about a choice. So, you know, he can choose to do this procedure or restart his life. So is he going to choose the former or the ladder? And that's just a little word pun.
I'm a big fan of puns. I think it's important. Maybe you can use that as the tagline on the box of the DVD if you ever get to distribution like that. It's like,
oh yeah,
he has a big decision to make, you know.
On the crew on set would always make jokes about like, you know, what is the ladder verse, like the cinematic universe behind the ladder. And so we came up with all these, you know, different premises, like the sequel could be called Ladder Two Rungs Don't Make a Right, and you know, there's different little fist jokes like that. Which is always fun. You know, you got to have the crew banter on set. And it's one of those things for me where like I said, the past 5 years of my life has been dedicated to this project called The Ladder. I've had to explain what The Ladder is so many times that at this point, I almost feel like it's lost its own meaning for myself. And it's kind of funny. So I got to refocus myself. I'm like, okay, this is what the movie's about. But it's also just kind of a fun title. And I feel like I have a lot of friends that anytime they walk by any ladder, they just send me a photo of it, and or they'll post it on their Instagram and tag The Ladder Film, which is kind of a funny joke.
I think that's a very good way to drum up social media support for that. I think that's a very good, funny inside joke. I think that's maybe how you get the widest audience. Maybe you could do a Home Depot sponsorship there.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's also funny because, you know, I have so many friends in the film industry, and pretty much any grip rental you're going to get is going to come with a 6-foot or 12-foot ladder. So lots of ladders on set. In fact, just this past weekend, we were doing our pickup shoots. We, you know, we had a ladder because we were filming this overhead shot, and we just, you know, couldn't stop laughing on set that we were filming the ladder.
Good, solid banter is definitely what keeps a crew together. You know, got to have that good jokes and banter to keep everyone lighthearted.
Oh, totally.
Especially with something that can be more heavy and sentimental, you know?
No, totally. And, you know, for me, I've had, you know, some friends or mentors tell me that, like, if you don't feel like you're a family with your crew by the end of the movie, like, chances are you didn't make a good movie. I actually think my second assistant camera, Jacob Hoxie, said that to me. I would just say that, like, yeah, really, I mean, I had such an amazing crew, and something that was really cool is that, like I said, a lot of my crew was from NYU, and they flew into Ketchikan for 3 weeks to make this movie. We all rented out a house and kind of stayed at the house together when we were filming the movie. So we all got very close. My producer, Alexandria Hellman, is a really big supporter of like crew morale. So she would always make sure that on the off days, we had like fun activities for the crew to sort of get immersed in Ketchikan. And I actually thought it was really important. Like they got to go on a hike. They got to go to Alaska Lumberjack Show. They got to, like, you know, visit restaurants in town. And it felt like by the end of the film, they had their own pride in Ketchikan, and it kind of helped them make a better movie. Like, I think when you watch this film, My hope is that if you've been to Ketchikan before, it's going to feel like, oh, wow, they really nailed capturing Ketchikan. And then if you haven't been to Ketchikan before, I hope when you watch it, you kind of feel like you went on a trip there and you kind of saw the sights. And I think there's sort of a love and an honest approach to Ketchikan, which is sort of a character in the film, that could have only happened if my crew, you know, had a good morale and love for the town. And it was just so amazing having the community get so involved. I mean, there are things that we did on set that would not have been possible without the community support. I mean, the boat day is a great example. You know, I came in with a plan of how I thought we were going to film the boat day. And then we luckily had some fishermen in town who gave us ideas and completely recontextualized, you know, what my approach was going to be. We also had local people help us with, you know, rainproofing our tents when we were filming, or we shot overnight at Ward Lake, which is like a little lake like park in Ketchikan. And we had locals come in to cook food and keep us warm. And the list goes on to how the way different people contributed. And it just kind of created a vibe on set that made the film, I think, really work. Like, for me, I want the tone of the movie to be sort of this like mysterious drama sci-fi film, but there's a lot of heart in it. And at the end of the day, it's a family movie about a father and his son and the town that they grew up in. And so I think all that has to be there. One thing I'm really excited about is the production design of the film. My production designer, Natalia Ferrara, she put a lot of attention to detail into sort of creating a canvas for the film that I think reflected the textures and the colors of Ketchikan. One way that we did that is we sort of did these community posts. We're like, hey, we're looking for all these different types of things from your home, like bring them in and we'll feature them in the movie. So we had like people's paintings that they did themselves. We had indigenous art that came in. We had real fishing gear. We had plates. We had couch. Like, it was crazy. We had like a mishmash of everybody, like so many different homes in Ketchikan all gave little props and details that sort of created our world. And then what was really cool is we filmed all over Ketchikan. Like, sometimes when you're making an indie film, the best way to do it under budget is to try to limit your locations. But we had a lot of locations in the film because we had the house where it took place. We shot at Ward Lake. We shot at two different hotels, Cape Fox and The Landing. We shot downtown. We shot at a diner. We shot like literally all over the town. And, you know, my hope was sort of to capture the feeling of Ketchikan in the film. But it also meant that like a lot of people got to be involved, and we kind of got to make, I think, an honest portrayal of my hometown.
What is the filmmaking community like in Ketchikan? And, you know, you mentioned with indie films, you have a lot of limitations, but were there any specific advantages or disadvantages that you faced in Ketchikan when it came to filming?
Growing up, I didn't really experience a lot of a big filmmaking community. There are some really, really great filmmakers who are from Ketchikan, some who still live there, some who have gone on and done other things. One of my first mentors for filmmaking is a videographer, photographer, creative named Mark Osborne. He taught me a lot. There's a really famous artist named Ray Troll, who I think some Alaskans are familiar with. He makes a lot of salmon art as well.
Yeah, big Ray Troll fan. He made all those salmon shirts, right? It's like,
yeah. Well, shout out to Ray Troll because he gave us shirts to use as like perks in the crowdfunding campaign back in the day. But his son, Patrick Troll, is really a great filmmaker and working on documentary films. Actually, right now, is working on a film about Ray Troll's life. There's other filmmakers who are from there. Some that have gone on and, like I said, moved away. But you know, it's a small town. There's not really, from my understanding, a really big like teen videography class. There's a local TV station called KPU TV with some really great creatives that work there, and they make great content about Ketchikan. They actually support us a lot. They did making of film for the short film. They're making a making of film for the feature, and they also filmed this like little Easter egg that's going to be in the movie, which is going to be really cool. They also saved us because we didn't have a time code sync for the slate and the camera and the sound, and they happen to have one, so they let us borrow it for the shoot. There's definitely a community there. I mean, I would say I'm probably now, you know, if people are going to talk about filmmaking in Ketchikan, they may mention The Ladder just because so many people were involved with it. But if anything, I mean, I hope that this film inspires other people. I mean, I'm a huge advocate for like everything you could ever need to make a movie is in your own pocket. And so people who are getting into filmmaking now, like there's a lot of gear and technology that's out there to try to make filmmaking more accessible. I'd say a lot of the software and technology that's out there sort of misses the mark, because sometimes it adds all these features but doesn't really give you what you really need. At the end of the day, you need a camera, ideally a camera that can record 24 frames per second, and some way to get sound. And as long as you have those two things, chances are you can make a good film, especially a narrative film. And then, you know, everything else sort of like just helps you elevate that. But at the end of the day, it's just about storytelling and it's about visual storytelling. So yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's other filmmakers. Like I don't want to be the expert on all filmmakers in Ketchikan. But you know, it definitely is a small community. You know, it's not even on the same level as Anchorage. And I know even Anchorage is still, you know, a growing community as well.
Yeah, for sure. Like personally, I came from King Career Center in a film class, and I had a wonderful mentor, Jeremy Blake. You know, he does a lot of sound work and motivated me to pursue what I'm doing. But the biggest thing he would tell us is nothing is stopping you from making films besides yourself. You know, cell phones nowadays are so accessible. They have all these pro camera options where you can even change the ISO on your own smartphone, right? So,
Yeah.
a lot of it just comes down to motivation and just ideas, you know? There's plenty of people who start young and they just take videos of them in their backyard of snails and bugs, and they narrate over it like it's an epic fight like Godzilla and Mothra, you know? So
Yeah.
when it comes to filmmaking, it just takes motivation.
No, totally. I mean, I got my start in Lego stop motion. Like that's the first thing I did that was filmmaking, and it all sort of, you know, developed into the career I have now. But you know, I gotta say, like, even as someone who's made a full feature film, like I had a 15-person crew, we were shooting an Arri Alexa Mini, we had all, you know, the cool toys and stuff like that. But so often I just wanted to be back with my little flip camera and my friends in the, you know, in my neighborhood just running around and making a movie, because like that's really what the joy is for me. In fact, when we're on set, it's so funny, but like my favorite day on set was this one day where we were shooting in the docks. We filmed the scenes we got. We were kind of losing light, so I was just kind of moving us along quickly. And we wrapped early. So I asked my DP, Toby Romero, and I asked my first assistant camera, Taylor J. Williams. And I was like, hey guys, let's wrap the rest of the crew. But I really want to just get some like establishing shots of the town to sort of cut into the opening of the movie. So we wrapped the rest of cast and crew. We sent them home. And then us three went around in a car and just got shots of the town, and that was more fun than anything else on set, just because it had that same sort of like running around my hometown and filming cool stuff.
For sure. And you know, you're currently based in Arizona, which does being outside of Alaska make the post-production process trickier for the latter, or is it just editing and you not necessarily like difficult one way or the other?
Well, you know, I at the end of the day, like, although I grew up in Alaska, you know, I didn't do like most of my filmmaking, like real filmmaking was sort of in high school and in college and things like that. So a lot of the collaborators that I work with, I met sort of after the fact of Alaska. So while I wanted to work with all the actors I grew up with, and I wanted to film in Alaska, like a lot of my collaborators for this film, you know, are just people that I work with and have connections with that may be from New York or here in Phoenix, or what have you. So post-production is sort of happening between New York and here. I have an editor here and do sound and VFX and color and all that in New York, where I have a lot of my connections. Like I mentioned, we had to do a second unit pickup for some scenes. You know, number one is when we were making our movie, the central character of Ryan, who's a son of Arthur, canonically, you know, like in the script, he lives in New York. And so that's what he's on the other side of the country, and that's sort of the disconnect between Arthur and Ryan. So it was always my dream to have a scene in the movie that did take place in New York, one that just ups the production value, but also gives us the opportunity to have a scene where we really see the difference in the lives that Ryan lives and Arthur lives. So we just filmed that. And then also there is two kind of scenes that happen in the movie that really needed to be shot in a studio space that like we just didn't really have in Ketchikan. So that got done in New York. And in that case, it just happened to be cheaper to fly out our actor to New York to shoot that scene with my crew that already lives in New York than, you know, bring everyone back to Ketchikan and deal with the whole ferry situation again. And then the last thing that we shot was a commercial with from Act Alive, which is the company that makes this procedure. And so in the movie, like, we already shot the scene in Ketchikan where the town learns about the procedure. We just have to shoot the commercial that they watch. And so we shot that and worked with an actor to sort of make that happen. But as far as post-production, I mean, the thing about me as a director that's I think really cool and helpful is that, like I said, when I grew up, I started with doing Lego stop motion. And I also just used to run around my neighborhood with my friends and film a bunch of stuff and then sort of figure it out later. Like, the core of myself as a filmmaker is sitting down in front of a computer and putting images together and making a story. And so actually the first cut of the movie, I just went ahead and edited myself. And then I have an editor sort of helping me refine it. But kind of being able to do a lot of post myself kind of helps with that. And so we're raising money, you know, to hopefully, you know, get the best quality color, sound, VFX, everything we can do. There's actually quite a bit of VFX in this film, which I've only worked with like a couple times before. So that's going to be an exciting challenge for me. But at the end of the day, like, you know, what I tell Ketchikan is like, this movie's going to get made. It's going to get completed for sure. But I just really want people to sort of donate and make it happen so we can make the best movie possible. We can get into festivals. We can get this to be seen by audiences worldwide. And, you know, hopefully it can inspire other filmmakers in Alaska. It can inspire studios to consider making a movie in Alaska. And I just, if anything, I hope that the impact it has is something that, you know, people can be excited about and that I can be proud of.
In the crowdfunding campaign, you know, if and when it's successful and you're able to proceed with the post-production as planned, what's next for the movie? Do you have a timeline or a plan for distribution, or is it still up in the air?
Yeah, well, you know, for those who aren't familiar with kind of how the way indie film works is they sort of like, you sort of have like layers of hope, right? Like, dream scenario, we finish the film. It's my goal that the first ever screening of the completed film is in Ketchikan, and that's probably going to be separate from like our film festival, you know, just a private screening for locals. But, you know, we're going to submit it to the big festivals like Sundance, Tribeca, South by Southwest, obviously any of those sort of like big festivals. That's our dream to get into. When you get into those films and you have a feature and you have, you know, a pitch behind it, you can sometimes get lucky and find like a major distributor, or at least a distributor who can, you know, create a successful path for the film. But, you know, there's lots of movies in the world and you can never count on that. So beyond that, you know, there's sort of like lower level festivals that are still really awesome festivals, but, you know, we would hope to get into. Since I graduated NYU, I've made like 3 different films I have screened at film festivals. They've screened at like over almost 40 all over the world. So I'm hoping that, you know, some of those festivals that I've already screened at before will accept a feature. So, you know, that's definitely a pathway there. But then once the festival sort of thing ends, and hopefully if we submit it to festivals this fall, sometime next year, you know, that festival season will conclude. We're kind of just going to see where we're at. Like I said, it might be a situation where we have a distributor and we're going to try to get it, you know, on a streaming service or in movie theaters. And if we don't have a distributor, then it's self-distribution. And so that may be looking like following along on the film, and we'll be hosting our own screenings, or we may, you know, find a way to do online on-demand sales. There's kind of lots of layers of options to get it out there. I'd say if people are interested in following along, you definitely want to follow us on social media. We're at The Ladder Film basically on every platform. You can look up The Ladder, a feature film, on Facebook. We have a website called theladderfilm.com. And then, of course, like I said, we're running the Seed and Spark campaign until April 18th. And that's www.seedandspark.com/fund/theladderfilm.
All right. I was about to lead us right into, you know, plug time, you know, where can people find you, but you're on it, man.
Yeah. Got to hustle.
Yeah. Right. You know, you gotta get everyone informed. The sooner the better. So is there anything else you'd like to bring up? Maybe your goals, or maybe some of the rewards you can get for funding the film at different tiers?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, like I said, we're fundraising for post-production of the film. So one thing that's really cool is that the film's already shot. I mean, I think kind of the initial pitch I have for people for why they should contribute is sometimes you'll contribute to a film and you don't ever know what's going to happen with it. But this one's already in the can. We already have a complete cut. We just need the money to sort of complete it and to pay the collaborators who are working so hard on it. And I'm committed that, you know, if we raise the money that, you know, we'll complete the film. One thing that's cool about Seed and Spark is that you don't get charged for your pledge unless the campaign is successful. So when people are pledging donations, they're basically saying like, if you get all the money, Emilio, I'll contribute this much. But you know, you don't ever want to like give money and then never know if they actually have what they need to complete the film. So that's a really cool aspect of Seed and Spark that I like to sort of highlight. As far as the perks, at just $25, you unlock the first 25 minutes of the film. And then we have tiers that go up. We have things like exclusive merchandise that I can sign on request that was the same style of like merch that we wore on set. And so you can sort of be in that exclusive club. We have a cool The Ladder hat that's for very, very exclusive contributors. Like I said, we're going to have our screening. So there's a high-end VIP package, and we'll bring you to Ketchikan, and you can sit in the VIP section of the premiere and be involved. And then one that I kind of want to pitch to people, which is sort of a unique opportunity, is I'm a filmmaker, but when I'm not doing narrative work, I also do a lot of sort of branded documentary style promo videos for organizations, for businesses, sort of commercials where, you know, I interview people in the business and sort of pair it with B-roll and make exciting videos for promotion. I do that professionally. So one thing we're offering at the $10,000 tier is that you can become an official sponsor of the film. So if you contribute $10,000, if you're a business or organization, I'll come to you, I'll make you a video to promote your film, and then also you'll become an official sponsor of The Ladder. And that's something that I'm just making exclusive for like Alaska places in Alaska, or, you know, in Phoenix, like places I can easily travel to make that happen. But really, like, I see the long-term success of this movie being meaningful. I think there's an incentive and value into organizations, businesses, individuals to get involved. And I would say if anyone's interested in investing, which is sort of outside of the crowdfunding aspects, and you want to be an actual investor, that is also an option as well. We have some investors that literally own percentage of The Ladder, which means in perpetuity, whatever success the film brings, they will get revenue from and hopefully eventually profit. So if that's also something that you want to be involved in, you can definitely reach out and I can tell you more information about that.
All right. Now that sounds like you got everything all wrapped up. It's good to go. You know, just need that last push to get it out there for distribution.
Yep. We're all climbing the ladder together, right?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Another ladder pun, you know. Got yep. How many ladder puns do you have off top of your head after this film set?
Ooh. I mean, like I said, the easiest one is just anytime you come across a ladder, kind of mentioning it when we're on set. I would like kind of point to the ladder. One joke that my production designer, Tali Ferrara, would like roll her eyes at is anytime I saw a ladder, I'm like, we should put that in the background of the shot. Gosh, I can't think of too many other ones, but you know, just a lot of.
Do you have a ladder count for the film? Do you have ladders in the background? Do you have an official ladder count?
No, but you know, I should do that, or maybe the film club podcast can look into that, and we can know what the number is. That'd be really interesting.
I would love to do a ladder count. I would love to do a ladder count. How many hashtag the ladder Instagram story posts would I have to do to get a share out of this revenue share?
Oh, you know,
because I'll just walk around Home Depot all day. You know, I'll just post ladders all the time. It'll be the only thing I talk about.
Well, you know, maybe if you can help me land that Home Depot X the Ladder merchandise collaboration, maybe that's the secret for our success.
I think we definitely got to focus on merch as the next step, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was great having you, Emilio. It's been a great talk, and I'm glad we could get the ladder up here on Alaska Steam Media Institute, you know, get more eyes and more ears on it.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
That was Emmy producer Jordan Kell speaking with filmmaker Emilio Miguel Torres about his feature film, The Ladder. You've been listening to Film Club, a production of Alaska Teen Media Institute. Our show's theme was composed by Kendrick Whiteman, with additional music from Devin Schreckengust. Alaska Teen Media Institute is based in Anchorage, Alaska. We'd like to acknowledge the Dena'ina of people whose land we work on. Many thanks to supporters of our podcast, including the Alaska State Council on the Arts. The views expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the views of our sponsors. Thanks to our listeners who contribute to our programs and help us leverage additional funds and grants. If you'd like to support Youth Voices in Alaska and help keep our podcast going, you can support us through Patreon. It's a membership platform that makes it easy for you to support creative endeavors, like ATME, just go to patreon.com/alaskateenmedia. You can also help out by subscribing to, rating, or writing a review of our podcast on Apple Podcasts. Every little bit helps us get our stories out there. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and X, formerly known as Twitter, at Alaska Teen Media. Follow us for all sorts of updates. For Alaska Teen Media Institute, I'm Orman DeLois. Thanks for listening.